Here's Ryan.
All right. Ryan, alcoholic. I've been through the steps as I laid out the big book with the help of a couple big book step study sponsors. Definitely higher power and made some amends and practiced the latter steps to the best of my willingness and priorities on a daily basis. Caleb, thanks for asking me to share. It's been a little while since I've been up here. It's great to see a good turnout up here. Used to come here a lot a few years ago. Schedules change and move different locations, so hasn't been as consistent, we'll say. So kind of going back and forth here on talking about resentment and then at the same time maybe qualifying. I grew up in an alcoholic household, from an early age. That's basically kind of what I remember about my childhood. Is just chaos and car accidents and police and, all these things and deaths and, all this stuff. And, I just thought it was normal. And I thought that was what life was. And, I would say things. I remember, the DARE officer came and I would say things and people would just look at me like, okay, can we talk to you outside? And I'm like, what? They're like, don't say that stuff in front of other kids. And to me, I just didn't get it. I just thought that was normal. And then I remember from an early age thinking there was something deeper. Like it says here, our liquor was but a symptom. I always felt there was something, even from a young age, that kind of, I always had this uneasiness or this discomfort or that I just didn't really fit in or belong everywhere. And I always remember thinking, okay, what is this? Or thinking I could take some pill even then, medicine that would make me feel normal again. That went on and ultimately I found that the first time I drank, I was kind of like, oh, that's the medicine. You know what I mean? Now I don't have the weight of the world on my shoulders. Now I don't hate everybody, or now I'm not just have to put on this mask of being okay. I actually feel okay, until I didn't. But so I ran with that, and I drank to oblivion every time I drank. I was a blackout drinker from the get-go, and just once I started, it just went off from there. And then added in extracurricular activities, dry goods. The whole gamut got to the point that I couldn't drink without doing anything else. The drinking now was it just triggered everything else, and I would go to extremes to try to get other substances at well while being hammered, which didn't really bode well for me or people around me or police. And, I got arrested multiple times, ended up in multiple detoxes. I drove to see my brother in Florida. I was 21. I stayed up for 3 days and then drove to Florida, from Waterville, and this is normal. And then, stayed up the whole time somehow. And then partied with that night. And the next thing I know, I'm in a rehab in Tallahassee. And that's how I met all his friends. They visited me and they wouldn't let me leave. It's funny now, but I was pissed. I wanted to get out and they were keeping me there. And, that wasn't my only stint. That happened a few times at other locations that I went to, and I didn't really get the drift. I just surrounded myself with people that partied like that, so it kind of seemed normal and it was cool, and until inside it just wasn't. And then for me, it was just I had a bunch of these jackpots, but then I had kids, had a kid, and then. I just kind of started feeling all that stuff that I felt and seeing it in my child. And it was holy shit. So I'd already had the big, big jackpots. But then there was just this day that I woke up after my son and his mother went away that time. And then I didn't even really do anything. I just blacked out that night and I just woke up and I was I can't do this anymore. And I was hungover for I don't even know how many days. But thank God it was multiple because, I'd been to AA ever since I can remember. like 4 years old, in and out. My mother was in and out all the time, so we were just there, and then next thing, hospital, then there, and then rehabs, and, you know, going all these things, Al-Anon, Alateen, Alaken, I don't know, Alucard, pick a, you know, all of it. It was, I went to all those, and, you know, so I was like, this, I didn't want to, I just, you know, I thought, Al, you know, I didn't really like, I didn't want to be like her, you know what I mean, so I tried to push myself away from being an Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I was young, it was just like smoke everywhere, and it was just a place where you colored and it was smoke. and then, you know, and then this time around, I just like Googled or whatever you did 10 years ago. I don't know if they had Google.
I think they had Google.
Did they? And I found a meeting, and it was ended up being in Saco, and I kind of walked in, and I just had, you know, I was just down the whole time. I mean, the first year, I think I cried at every meeting. I was just so ashamed of myself, and I just couldn't cope with emotions. You know, just something different this time, and this vibe. Like, people, like, were smiling, but not, like, I didn't feel it as fake smiling. I felt it as genuine. Like, they seemed really happy, and I resented them for it. But, no, they, and I kind of, like, gravitated towards that, and this guy came out and chased me down after the meeting. And basically I was like, give me your phone number. And I'm like, no, I'm like, no, I'm like, no offense. I'm not like that. I didn't know what was going on. And I was, he was like, just give me your number. And then he ended up started calling me, and that he's gone out 100 times, I think, since then, but I haven't, it was, I don't know how it happened. It was a big book meeting. And then I started, like I said, that guy, he kept bringing me to these meetings, and it just felt different. And then after, like, say, 6 months or so, I finally got up enough nerve to, like, ask for a sponsor in Big Book. You know, it was like asking somebody out on a date. I just, like, walked up to him all timidly, and I was like, you know, can you be my sponsor? And very much expecting to get rejected, and then, you know, I have to be like, see, this doesn't work. People hate me. But he said yes, and he would be honored. And then I said, well, okay. I didn't believe it at first, you know, like now going around through the steps. And so right then we were like, let's go meet at Dunkin'. And I'm like, in public? Yeah. You know, I'm like, I'm like, I don't want to talk about shit in public. You know, so I'm like the whole time. And he's like, no, tell me about yourself. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm just like this. So I kind of like, you know, I didn't want to talk. You know, so it took a while. I mean, that went on forever. You know, we finally got into reading, and thank God I wrote down all these things in this book, because I could see the pain I was in, and I can read through it and, like, see the transformation, because at the time I wasn't getting it. I'm like, this is, you know, everything in here is, like, I'm kind of, like, writing, like, oh, I don't believe this, and, you know, stuff like that, and then I could see it be like, yes, I do believe in God, you know, as it kind of progressed through. We finally got to the third step, and, you know, I say I'm never going to do a lot of things, get married, so I, you know, he's like, all right, you're going to step three, we're going to get on our knees, and we're going to hold hands and say this prayer. I'm like, there's no way I'm holding your hands and saying a prayer. And so we're on the floor, you know, holding hands, and we're saying the prayer, and I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? And then at the end of it, like, the floodgates open, and like this, it kind of like opened up. It was like the first time that I had like let down my guard. So it was like, it was a very big point in my life at that time. And then what I wanted so badly was to get into the writing. And then I got into the writing, and then I didn't want to be in the writing. You know, it takes me a while to do things. I wouldn't recommend people taking as long as I did to do the steps or to get through college or to get through every point in life. I do it about three times as long as everyone else, like 9 years for a bachelor's or something like that, and who knows. But, you know, once we got into it, the beginning of writing down all these resentments, to me that was easy. Like, I've had sponsees that are like, well, I've got three people. For me, it was like, you know, like everybody I could ever think of, and I'm like, you know, I got all these people, and all these people wronged me, and screw you. And then he's like, all right, you know, now we're going to... And then I had to list all the other resentments, you know, against all these people, and then I'm like, oh. And then A-Z-A-A-A-Z, you know, and some of the people, and, you know, some of the stuff that came about of actually doing that, where I was like, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to write down all this stuff? I started with the people that I worked with, and then I started way back, but then I started with, like, this present people, and, like, people that I thought I really, really, really hated. Like, these guys I worked with, like, these know-it-alls and stuff like that. And I found out I had, like, one resentment against them. And, like, I didn't even know them. I just, the way they looked in the office was, like, my resentment. Like, they think they know more than me. And then I went to people that I really admired and loved, and I had countless resentments against them. Like, the people that were close to me, and that I thought I respected, and I thought that I held up on this pedestal, I really just wanted to chop it down, essentially. Like, people that are really, really close, for some reason, it's not the best, you know, like, those are the people that I had the hugest resentments against in the largest quantity. You know, and then I went through and listed, like, all the things that had affected. And for me, it was almost every one of them every time. And then in my situation, fear was next to almost everything. When I got into my fear inventory, you know, there was a lot of fears there. Like, to me, it was, I had, like, the fight or flight for everything. From, you know, growing up, like, every single thing I viewed as an attack, like, any sort of, like, personal relationships, you know, ambition, sex, like, I viewed everything as somebody's trying to take something from me, and I got to hold on to my own, and, you know, somehow I'm going to lose something, and there's a lot of fear around that for me. And, you know, and then we had to move into when it was my stuff, you know, moving into the turnarounds and everything, and then my sponsor, we'd have to meet, and we'd meet in public or wherever, and he'd, like, so my writing would be, like, this cryptic coded, like, you couldn't really read it at certain angles, so I would, like, and then I would make sure, I would almost be like this if we were at Dunkin' again or something, like, kind of making sure no one could see what I had written. I was so, like, afraid of somebody seeing what was really going on inside or what I thought about them, because, you know, it was crazy stuff. But then getting into the turnarounds, you know, I started getting into it, and it took me a long time to get it, to actually get what the selfish was. You know, like, write it out, say it. Oh, I can say it, I can say it. I know I'm selfish, but how the heck, you know, I didn't want to go too deep, apparently. I just wanted it to be like, you know, like, what did you want? I'm like, well, I wanted to punch him, you know, or I wanted him dead, or I wanted to hurt him. And then it was like, all right, okay. That was, like, my first review. Every single one of them were like that. And, like, we're going to have to get a little deeper here. So I had to go back and redo a lot of stuff as well, because I, like I said, I thought I was getting it, but it took me a while to get it through to my head of really, to really nail that, the actual selfishness. And in order to do that, it was like, you really had to nail the resentment too and get kind of specific so that I could really, really get why I was selfish and what did I really, really want. And ultimately, it turned out most of the time is I wanted people either to like me or to think, like, oh, I want them to think I'm as good as them. And most of the time it was no. I really wanted them to think I was better than them. And then what was this lie I was telling myself? It was like, if I'm not better than them, I'm nothing. You know what I mean? I have to be above somebody. I can't be mediocre. Or I'm either going to be the worst, or I'm going to be the best. And I always tell myself that I had to be one or the other. I could not just be on an even keel or an even plane. So that was a lot of the lies that I always told myself. A lot of lies, but most of my resentments turned out to be is like, I thought that he thought he was better than me. And it was like, the guy never said anything to me. You know what I mean? It's like, I just resented him for that, the way he looked, or, you know, he was in better shape than me, or anything. It was, you know, very, very petty and very, very insecure. You know, the egomaniac with the inferiority complex. You know, and then, you know, when we did the third step, it was all that selfish, self-seeking, self-this, self-that. And I didn't kind of get it. And I said the third step prayer every time before I wrote. And then when I got to that self-seeking, you know, what did I do when I didn't get what I wanted? For me, it was like a lot of the time it was talking bad about people behind their back, or just fuming inside, or just holding this like, oh, when I wait till, you know, the just the grouch and the brainstorm, just going over things over and over, of what I was going to do to them or how I was going to do this and how I could get payback or how I could position people to think I was better and then not like them and build up this team against that person. You know, a lot of unhealthy behaviors. And then, you know, what ultimately got down to that fear of, you know, not getting what I wanted. Fear of being weak was huge. And again, that's more of people, other people's opinion of me. Like, I just was petrified if somebody didn't like me or somebody didn't, you know, didn't think that I was as good as I thought I had to be, or, you know, if I wasn't perfect, somebody found out I was stupid, you know, or anything. I wasn't, you know, I was going to be a phony in my job, phony at school, phony as a friend. Like, all this stuff just piled up one after the other. You know, getting that all on the paper, I kind of fought it a little way, and then it took me a while, and this is why I don't recommend doing that. You know, you had to live in that all the time. You know, it was always, I wasn't, you know, once you're on the other side, you can kind of, you know, start not feeling that way all the time. When I was in it, I was still in it. You know, I'd get up at 4 to write or something like that, just the way my schedule was. And then sometimes I would have to pray to, like, bring me back to the present. You know what I mean? Just to, like, get me back to the day, so I wouldn't be living in all that stuff while I was writing. And then rolled into having to read all that. And moving on to finally getting rid of all that stuff that's inside and that victimhood and that blaming other people for everything. And one of the big things I learned from doing this was I swear I never do a lot of things, I would never, you know, make, you know, say, forgive my mother for anything. I wouldn't do this, I wouldn't do that. You know, she owes me the apology. She owes me this and that. You know, and then going through and doing all this writing and resentments, you know, what was I doing? What was my self-seeking? Was I'm holding that over her head now. You know, she's got how many, 25, 30 years of sobriety? I don't know how long it was then, but, you know, and I'm still holding that over her head as like, oh, yeah, you know, oh, yeah, you remember that? You know, things like that when I'm 25 years later. So I did owe her an amends for the way I had been behaving as an adult, you know, versus things that happened while I was a child. I didn't owe any apologies for things that happened when I was 7 or 8, but I did owe an amends for the way I'd been behaving 25 through 35, you know. So that was kind of a big deal, and I ended up making an amends to her, you know, in the 8th and 9th step. But just getting on the other side of all that, you know, being able to breathe, being able to not feel like there's a nail file on my bones all the time, just like on edge. I couldn't imagine speaking in front of people and talking about feelings and stuff, feelings, you know what I mean? And like exposing yourself to people. And I have relationships now with men that people on the outside, they can't imagine like talking about the things I talk to people in AA about, you know, like it's real world stuff. Like I'm going through an issue here. I'm hurting. This person's really getting to me, or, you know, and I'm feeling vulnerable. Things like that, that you just can't, a lot of people can't imagine talking about that, especially as a guy, you know, with other guys that I've been afforded as a result of going through this process and staying with AA for now, for as long as I have, you know, and then getting the ability to be able to sponsor people. And I told that story about the Dunkin' Donuts, and the first night I spoke, I don't know, it was Worcester or somewhere, I was on the road, some happened to be a Big Book meeting, and the guy lived in Kennebunk, where I lived, but he was in Worcester, and I was in Worcester, asked me to be a sponsor, and I was, oh, sure, well, yeah, I guess, sure. Then I asked him to meet me at Dunkin' Donuts, and he's like, what the hell? You know, but, and I'm like, well, hey, you know, you got to get through your fears, but so that's been the other biggest gift. Like I swore, you know, when I did the third step and I was like, oh, I'll promise to go and help other people. Like I had my fingers crossed in my mind, behind my back, like I'm too busy. But then, you know, with bookending this whole process of being able to take guys through this process has obviously what's kept me sane and sober. You know, that's the part that I didn't get in the beginning, that now being able to do that has really fulfilled different aspects of my life, and just being able to pay it forward. So if you are in the midst of it, you're thinking about it, or you're writing, or getting stuck somewhere, just get through it. Sometimes it takes time. You're on your own path, but just stick with it. It's the best thing that I've done for myself and those around me. So thanks.
Thank you.